God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody here? First 30 days. Feel free to unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Joe, welcome, brother.
Hello, my name is Frankie. I'm an alcoholic, 15 days sober.
Frankie, welcome. Awesome.
My name is Jerry. I'm an alcoholic, 7 days sober.
Hi, Jerry. Welcome. All right. As of right now, the chat is available for everyone to post publicly. So if you're comfortable with that, if you want to throw your numbers out there for new people, feel free to do that. Glad you're all here. You're the reason we're here. Anybody else? First 30 days. This is exciting. All righty then. Leanne, would you read the preamble, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
My name is Leanne and I'm an alcoholic. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. They may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Leanne. The format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are very excited to have Pat O from Orange County, California, come and tell his story. After Pat shares, then we'll give him a break somewhere around the top of the hour. We'll call for announcements, pass the seven tradition basket, et cetera. And then we'll reconvene for the last 25 minutes of the meeting and ask the questions that you submit. We don't have any questions in the can. There are questions that occur to you that you want to know about. So please feel free to chat those to the user questions. It's really Larry, who's awesome. He shows up every month and does this. And that's it. So feel free to submit your questions. And Pat, I've been looking forward to this all week, brother. Thank you so much for coming to share with us. I don't want to take up another minute of your time. I give you Pat.
Thank you, David. My name is Pat and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Pat. I can't wait to hear that again.
Hi, Pat.
Thanks, Dave. It's going to be so good. I can't wait to get back to a meeting, man. I feel bad for the first person I give a hug. I'm going to be like, don't leave me. You know, I don't know about you, but when COVID hit, all my abandonment issues kicked in, you know, and, you know, and all the structure, right? All the structure that I was raised with, right? David saw me and right? It's like, I thought, it's just Zoom at 4 o'clock in California. No need to wear the suit, you know? You know, but I hear the old timers, you know, from my home group that taught me this, so you better put that tie on, you know, everything that comes out of your mouth is full of, you know what? And, at least if you wear a suit, you let the newcomer know that AA changed your life, you know? And so I hear the little voices still, and I'm like, God, I don't want to put the suit on. It's hot. It's like 90 degrees in my apartment. You know, I got the fan on you know, but the good thing is with Zoom, it's mullet time, you know, mullet speaking, you know? Business on the top and who knows what's on down below, you know what I'm saying? And you know, the Zoom world is been so fun. I'm grateful for the servants in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. You guys came together and put the meetings on and you've been able to keep us connected, and I'll be forever grateful for the servants in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because if you're new, I hope that I can carry a message of what the old timers taught me when I was brand new. But they talked to me about having a spiritual malady. I didn't know what that meant, a malady. They're like, you have a spiritual sickness. Well, they didn't say you. I heard it was you because I'm self-centered. But they said, we have a spiritual malady. And a malady is a sickness. And I have a disconnect between me and you. I have a disconnect between me and God. And I have a disconnect between me and me. And man, when COVID hit, I got so scared. I was like, how am I going to get to AA and how am I going to be with my people and my tribe? And am I going to get loaded and all that kind of stuff, you know? And we got together and we made this happen. So thanks for inviting me, David. I love the 10th step promise. It says we have entered the world of the spirit, you know, and it's exactly what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's I've entered the world of the spirit. You know, the 12th step, if you're new, says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, which means I need to do these steps in order to have a spiritual awakening, right? I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what really that meant. But when my sponsor told me, he said, we have entered the world of spirit, right? I could connect with that. I was like, you know what I mean? I could connect with that. And it gave me this a sense of hope. And I come here today, you know, to try to explain or try to let you know what Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step process has done for me, right? But being able to like describe a spiritual awakening, it's kind of like trying to explain what the taste of a banana tastes like. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't verbalize it. And for you to comprehend and hold on to that. But I hope that I can tell you my story today, which can connect to the spirit in you. You know, if you're new here, we're a storytelling society. We come here and we tell our stories, and something in the story connects me to you. And that's what I was taught when I was brand new. You know, they said, well, there's no lectures here. You know what I mean? I know this book because I've taken guys through it, but you know, we don't want to hear no lecture, you know, just share your experience, kid. And so that's what I come to do. So thank you, David. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I have a love affair for this thing. You know, I'm a grateful alcoholic today. Man, I remember when I was new and some bozo would get up behind the podium. He goes, my name's Fred and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I thought, man, you're a loser, dude. What do you mean you're a grateful? You're grateful that, I mean, I just got here. I destroyed my whole life. You know what I mean? And you're grateful, you know, and grateful, you know, grateful people are happy people and those aren't our, you know, I'm like, oh my God, these guys are losers. You know what I'm saying? So if you're new looking at me going, he's a loser, you're right. You know what I'm saying? But I'll tell you what, I'd rather be a sober loser than a loser out there on the streets dying of alcoholism, dying of a disease. I don't even know what I have. You know what I mean? You'd go to the doctor, right? And they'll tell you what you got, you know, and they'll tell you like some solutions for that disease, right? To maybe help you out. We get to AA, we're like, yeah, I don't got that. And your solution weren't going to work for me. I'm not going to try it, but I already know, right? Contempt prior to investigation. I already know that what you got to offer is nothing that I want. And so if you're new, welcome. Welcome to a life-changing process called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love AA. I got sober October 23rd, 2002. I didn't plan on staying sober 18 minutes, let alone 18 years, I'll tell you. I really didn't. I really, man, if I'd have known it was going to be this long, I'd have taken another drink. And if you've been here long enough, you know that probably wouldn't have made it. But I didn't know that was going to be my sobriety date, you know, and I have a sponsor. His name is Mike Silkio, and I absolutely love that man. He knows everything about me, everything. I have no little secrets with that guy. And it's good to be an open book because I walked around Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years having secrets. And I'll get into that since I got an hour. I'll be able to talk about that stuff. But it was a painful, painful time, you know, and I have a home group. My home group's called the South Coast Speakers Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet at 8 o'clock in Laguna Beach on a Wednesday night. Well, actually, that's a lie. That's the first lie I told. We meet on Zoom at 7 p.m., right? But when we get back to action, that's where we'll be. And you'll hear a lot of the speakers, like from Pacific Group and stuff like that. And they'll talk about Chuck Chamberlain and going to Chuck C's house, top of the hill, and our meeting's at the bottom of the hill. And our first meeting was in February of 1946. And I'll be forever grateful for the old timers that welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll never forget a man by the name of John Ackerland. And I'll never forget the softness of that man's hand. He had a thick accent. And I always get Scotland and Sweden mixed up. So I'm not even going to try. But he had a thick accent. And he put his hand out. And I'll never forget the softness of his hand. That guy said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, kid. He said, come with me. And he brought me in the meeting. It was like 200 people meeting, speaker meeting. And it felt like 1,000, but he took me all the way to the back of the room where the coffee was. And he gave me a half a cup of coffee in them styrofoam cups. I love those styrofoam cups. I miss them. You know, it's been a long time since I had a styrofoam. Oh, and that coffee's horrible. You know what I'm saying? But I miss AA coffee. You know what I'm saying? And, but he took me back there and he gave me half a cup of coffee. And this is how my mind worked when I was new. I thought, half a cup, man, these guys are selfish, dude. Can't you give me a whole one? But he knew, right? If you've been here around, you know, he gave me a half a cup for the right reason. And then he gave me half of a donut, which I thought, man, these guys are kind of stingy, man. And then the donut was stale, you know, and he brought me to the second row up front where the old timers sit, you know, and he put me in the middle of the row. Yeah, so I couldn't get out, you know, and I was surrounded by old timers. I mean, these guys had 40 plus years, you know. It was John Ackerlin, Tom Whalen, Lynn Wilder, Frank O'Rourke, Johnny Crean, like these old timers. I remember they're the pillars in our community, man. And these guys had 40 plus years. And they sat me there and they sat around me and they told me their stories, man. They talked about drinking and then they all laughed. Ha, 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 ha. Oh yes, one time I drank and ha, 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 ha. This other time I drank and ha, ha, ha. And I'm thinking, man, are they ever gonna let me talk? You know, and they didn't, you know. The meeting started and I thought I gotta get out of here, you know. And I'm gonna go in slipper row in the back, you know, where all the slippers are, you know. And they said, no, you're gonna stay here, kid. And so I sit, I'm like, oh, I don't want to sit here with these guys, you know, and I got that nervous disposition that the big book talks about. You could probably feel it in my, you can feel it in me. It's like, it's, you know, you go to the doctor, they'll say you got anxiety, you know what I'm saying? The big book says nervous disposition, right? I'm just like that awkward, weird poopy pants kid. You know what I mean? I'm just like, you know, the big book also talks about self-centeredness. You know, that's me. And I'm sitting there and they would have diagnosed me with ADD, you know what I mean? But I know it's anxiety too, because I'm like bouncing all over the place. No coffee, you know, that's how I am. And I'm sitting there, you know, and the meeting's going, it's an hour and a half speaker meeting. And John would put his hand on my leg and he'd say, don't forget to breathe, kid. I'm like, oh yeah, breathe. You know, and then she gets up to go like walk to the bathroom. I'm like, no, I want to go to the bathroom, you know. And he's like, we don't go to the bathroom during the meeting. He's like, it's disrespectful. I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. He goes, well, you go before and you go after, but during the meeting, you stay in your seat. I was like, okay, you know, and I'm a people pleaser, right? So I wanted that guy to like me. So I'm like, okay, whatever you say, sir, you know. And then after the meeting it ended, and the guy, and John goes, okay, you need to go thank the speaker. And I was like, I didn't even like the speaker. Why am I going to go thank him? And he said, well, he drove all the way from LA. It was a 3-hour drive in traffic. You know, why don't you go thank the speaker? I said, all right. So I stood there in line for like, it felt like 3.5 hours. It was probably like 3.5 minutes. But I'm like, thanks for driving from LA. You know, I get out of there, you know, but I felt safe with those old guys, man. I felt safe with those old, they had no judgment against me. They didn't care if I was an addict, an alcoholic. They were going to let me diagnose myself. And that wasn't my experience coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, which I'll get into, but the next week I showed up and I went to go with those old guys because it was safe there. And the leader asked me to read and John goes, oh no, you ain't reading. And I said, I was resentful. I couldn't read. I didn't want to read, but I was still resentful. I'm like, what do you mean I can't read? He goes, you don't have the proper shirt to be behind the podium. Next week, why don't you show up with a collared shirt on and then you can get behind the podium, you know? And I was like, so next week I showed up with a collared shirt because I wanted John to like me because I'm a people pleaser, you know what I'm saying? And then they didn't even ask me to read and I caught another resentment, you know? And then after the meeting, all the newcomers are smoking together someone was talking about how they told their sponsor that they couldn't sleep and they gave this smart aleck answer about tell the newcomer to read the big book. That'll put him to sleep, you know? And so the next week I showed up to get John and I said, oh, John, I'm having a really hard time sleeping. He goes, oh, come with me, kid. And he took me to the literature table and he gave me a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Oh, dude, I was like, what about the big book, you know? And he tricked me. I go, why do I got to, what's this book? He goes, oh, this is the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. That'll put you to sleep, you know? And I said, why do I got to read the history of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he said, you need to start studying the thing and understanding the history of the thing that's going to save your life so that you have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous one day when you come to AA, you know? And I'm so grateful for that. Those old guys, man, they spoon fed me Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? They allowed me to stay here long enough for me to find alcoholism, you know? And I owe my life to those old guys. They've all passed on. And I hope that I could carry that same message of unconditional love that they gave me, you know? And that's my home group. There's a lot of history there, and I hope to preserve that history. We have a business meeting next week to talk about going back. That should be fun. And, you know, but we'll apply the traditions to the conversation, you know, and we'll get through it and we'll grow. And I'm grateful that I get to be a small part of that, you know, you got to be a small part of that. I don't got to be the main guy. I just get to be a voice in the background, you know, and I learned that throughout, because I'm like a take your ball kind of go home kind of guy. If you don't do it my way, I'm like, I'll find a new meeting, you know, because there's tons of meetings, you know what I'm saying? At least over here. And I don't do that today, though. I stay in, I hang in the game, and I learn to live with the group conscious, right? It teaches me how to play well with others. So it's a gift. I love it. And if you're new, you're like, I don't care about all that. Can you talk about drinking? And all right. So here it is. My first AA meeting. So I do want to pay respects to a dear friend, Sean Brickle. And Sean brought his kid to me, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago. And I had the opportunity to walk side by side with that young man. I think he's here. Q, if you're here, I love you. And his father passed away. He's from your area. And just my heart saddened, you know, and I want to pay respects to my mom too. My mom died with 44 years of sobriety in 2019. I just take a moment real quick. Bring their spirit into the room, you know, and you know, my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, as I was 11 months old, Emily, my mom was an alcoholic, not me, you know, and she brought me to AA. My mom was being sent to prison for 10 years, and my mom's the kind of alcoholic who gets pulled over for drinking and driving, and then she jumps out and tries to beat the cop up, you know what I'm saying, and then she gets busted for drunk driving and assault on a police officer. And my mom does this like, I don't know, 10 or 11 times. And so when I'm 11 months old, the judge is sentencing her to 10 years in prison. And she's got that public defender next to her. And then in the middle of the sentencing, that the judge goes, or you can go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my mom's like, prison or AA? Prison or and the public defender is like, you should probably go to AA, you know? And so she went to AA. You know, my mom's a blackout drinker, which means I'll never know who my dad is. You know, I mean, for all I know, my dad could be the cable guy. It's like, bow, chicka, bow, now, you know, and she didn't even know she was pregnant till she was in labor, you know, which, you know, it is what it is. It's a funny story to tell in AA, you know, and you know, she thought she was constipated. So she called 911. And I guess, cause that's what you do when you call, when you get constipated, you call 911. And you know, us in AA, like, we understand that kind of thinking, you know. Go tell the PTA that, though. They'll be like, whoa, you know. And so she gives birth to me in her living room, and she comes out of a blackout, and the paramedic's holding me. And the paramedic's like, you need to name him. She's like, name what? And my mom's name is Patty, so she named me Patrick, so she wouldn't forget my name, you know. And true story, you know. But she came to AA, you know, and I'm so grateful that the members in Alcoholics Anonymous didn't tell my mom that this is a closed Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and she wasn't allowed to bring her kid. I hear that crap all the time in my area, you know what I mean? Because if that would have been the case, my mom would have never recovered. I wouldn't be here today. Who knows what the story would have been. But the women in Alcoholics Anonymous met my mom at the door and they said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they took me. And they took me off over to the side and they played toys with me when I all through AA, you know, you guys fed me brown. I loved your brownies. They were good. You know, and my mom went to the meeting and my mom recovered. And the women in AA took care of me. I was at an AA meeting every day of my life until I was like 12 years old. But I will get into that. But I could recite the 12 traditions. I could recite chapter 5, all the readings. I mean, the end of the meeting, I held hands. I was like, keep coming back. The old timers told me we're saving the seat right here for you, kid. You know, I had no clue what that meant, but I went to every AA convention in California, you know, like after the meeting, the women would take the newcomer woman to Denny's, you know, and Denny's like a diner out here. I don't know if you guys have them there, but, you know, they'd take her to Denny's. And they would drink coffee, they'd smoke cigarettes, and I would pass out at Denny's every night of the week. And then they would let the newcomer go. They'd go home at 2:15 after the bar closed. And sometimes my mom would bring women home. I watched a woman die of this disease in my living room. Like, I knew what alcoholism was. I knew that it was a deadly disease. I knew what Alcoholics Anonymous was. You know, I remember the people, I watched a woman coming in broken, no teeth, you know what I mean? Homeless. She'd taken her year cake. She had a brand new dress on and she goes, I got a whole mouth of teeth. You know, and I remember just laughing as a little kid, man. I was like, that was a funny thing. And, but Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I saw miracles happen. And, you know, but I have that spiritual malady that those old guys talked to me about, you know, and the way my spiritual malady looks like is like, I'm the weird, awkward kid that smells like poopy pants and syrup. You know, that kid here, this will describe it all. I'm a right fielder on the baseball team. Any other right fielders here? Oh, David's giving me a nod. Thank God there's one of us, you know, because we're not bragging about being a right fielder, you know what I'm saying? But I'm the right fielder, you know what I mean? It's like their neighborhood sports and, you know, it's Morgan and Christopher and you guys are picking all the teams and there's two of us left. And Morgan goes, I guess I'll take Pat, you know, like that's me, you know what I mean? Second to last, you know, and I have a disease of perception. Like if you're new, like I have a disease of perception. I was raised with a lot of love. I grew up in AA, a lot of love. People told me they love me all the time. But being raised without a father, man, I would sit outside my bedroom window and I'd wonder if my dad was ever coming home. And I'd watch the cars come down the street and not turn into my apartment. And I had built an idea as a little kid that if my dad didn't love me, then no one loved me. You know, I'm a bedwetter pre-alcohol use. Any other bedwetters here? And no one's going to admit that one, right? But I remember, man, you get like one sleepover invite. That's about it, you know? And you guys would, I'd get invited over to the house and everyone would go to sleep. And I'd be like, don't go to sleep. Don't go to sleep. Don't go to sleep. Oh, I was asleep, you know? And I wake up in the morning. I'm like, oh, I did it again, you know? And so I'd flip the cushion over, man, and hope you didn't know. And I never got invited back. So I guess they found out, you know, but like, I just walked around with a lot of shame, you know, a lot of shame. A lot of just that awkward anxiety, man, I didn't fit in my earth suit was the problem, you know? And I remember one time I was on second base. I don't even know how I got there. I was terrified. I was so scared, man. I was self-obsessed is what it was. I didn't know if I had the right cleats on, if I wore the right belt, did I have the right, and the kid cracked the line drive. It was bases loaded. Kid cracked the line drive and I ran back to first base. You know, it was like a triple play in the wrong direction and little poopy pants back to the dugout. And as I'm going into the dugout, all my friends are running out. And what I heard my friends say that day is, you're a loser, you're a failure, and you're no good. Now, no, none of them said that, right? But that was the voice in my head. Loser, failure, you're no good. I remember looking at my mom and she's in the stands clapping. I mean, so proud of her kid, you know what I mean? She's like, oh, you know, and not probably got a triple play in the wrong direction. My mom was proud because it took me an hour to get out of that stupid car to go to that stupid field to play that stupid game one more time. And my mom was proud I had enough courage to get out of the car. But I remember looking at my mom that day saying, if I only had a dad, that had never happened. And I built this belief system as a little kid that was going to keep separate me from you. And I had no idea, right? I started to build a wall on the inside to keep you out. And I had no idea as a little kid, you know? And I took my first drink of alcohol at 9 years old. If you're new, you're thinking, is this guy ever going to drink? Well, here it comes. You know, get on the edge of your seat, you know, because it's important for me to let you know, like, the true character sober, right? That's the true character today. I walk into a room today, right? I can have those voices sometimes come up. Now, I got a program of action laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that allows me to walk through life, right? But I'm awkward. I got that anxiety. I'm weird, man. I know it's going to fail. I know the other shoe's going to drop eventually. My life is good. But eventually that shoe, the other shoe's going to drop. Like, that's the natural state. And at 9 years old, I took my first drink of alcohol and I was at an AA meeting of all places. And my little friends from AA, we caused trouble at the meetings. We ding dong ditch the same house every week and they would chase us into the meeting. And, you know, we just had a good time, you know, and I was messing with this, he was a chronic relapser. I didn't know that at the time, but I threw a pebble at him. He grabbed me and I kicked him in the shin and we ran outside and my friends were like 13, 14. I was nine. And we ran outside the hospital. We ran up this parking structure. I remember like it was yesterday. We were between the third and the fourth story. And those kids pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And I'll tell you what, man, before this day, I promised my mom, I'm not going to drink and I'm not going to do drugs. You know, the DARE program came and they said, who wants to sign the pledge? I signed the pledge. I'm never going to drink. I'm never going to do drugs. Then they gave me a little red bracelet. So I signed 20 pledges because I wanted 20 bracelets. You know, I wanted more before I started, you know, and, you know? And so like that day, those kids pulled out that bottle of Jose Cuervo and I forgot the pledge. It got, the bottle got to me and I was terrified. I was terrified because I never drank. And I took a pull off that thing and I hated the taste and I was overcome with fear. And what that fear told me was that I wasn't going to be like the rest of my life, you know? And I spit that stuff out. It was disgusting. The bottle came back around to me. And the second time I got that bottle, I was excited about having it. And the excitement for me wasn't that I was going to get drunk. The excitement for me was that I was going to have some friends. And so I took a pull off that bottle and I talked myself into holding that tequila down. And that tequila went down that day. And I can tell you the exact effect that alcohol has on this alcoholic body. In that moment, I connected with those kids. Like in that moment, I felt a part of, like in that exact moment, all of a sudden those kids high-fived me, man. They were calling me an old soul. You're an old soul, man. That got me into all kinds of things, you know? And I was a part of, you know, alcohol had that much power in my life. It took poopy pants and connected him to you. It took that little scared little boy that peed the bed and connected me with you. And I had an excuse why I peed that time. And, you know, but alcohol was that powerful in my life. Like alcohol is that powerful in my life. And subconsciously, somewhere inside of me, I said, I can't wait to do that again. Now, it was hard to get booze at mom's. She was going to AA, you know, and at 11 years old, a kid handed me a joint. And I wasn't like thinking about the purists in AA who were going to tell me I couldn't come to AA because I did drugs. You know what I mean? I just hit that weed, you know, smoked the weed. And this little elf chased me around the park, man. And I had the time of my life. Dude, for 2.5 hours, I hallucinated and never laughed as hard in my life. And I quickly equated, man, all the authority, teachers, parents, they're a bunch of liars. You know what I'm saying? They told me if I smoke weed, bad things are going to happen. Nothing bad happened to me. And I hit that adolescent mark and the middle fingers came up and I was on a mission. And I grew up in Orange County, California, in South Orange County. And we're about 60 miles from Compton. But I was listening in the suburbs, but I was listening to Eazy-E and NWA and Ice Cube gangster rap, you know, in 1992, right? When it was coming out, that tells you how old I am, you know, and but the parents were like, if you can't listen to that gangster rap, it's influential. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm not being influenced. And I got size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up and I got a 5XL sweatshirt on. I walk with a limp, you know what I mean? I drink St. Ives in a brown paper bag and I'm pouring beer in the curb for the dead homies. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I'm not being influenced. You know, I mean, I don't have any dead homies, but I'm getting ready for some, you know what I'm saying? And you know what I mean? And I'm just an absolute wreck, man. I'm drinking every night, smoking weed every day. You know what I mean? I'm already asking for spare change at school. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'm a hand-me-down kid. I don't have brothers and sisters. I'm an only child. So my hand-me-downs are coming from people from AA's kids, you know, and it wasn't Walmart back then. It was Kmart. And I grew up in a pretty well area, you know what I'm saying? And it's so crazy because I was telling my story at a conference in Idaho and a friend of mine heard, and she was like, I can't believe like hearing your story, like this is a perception, like, right. I thought like I had no friends. I thought I was awkward, weird. I thought that I was alone. She said, you were the most popular kid in high school. You know what I mean? And I just didn't know that, you know? And at 17 years old, like I came out of a blackout. I was peeing all over my mom's fish tank. You know, my mom's going to AA and her son's a wreck, you know? And I come home one night and my mom found a bag of weed in her house. And my mom's like, you can't smoke weed in my house. Now, I don't know how you hear that, David, but I hear I need to hide it better. You know what I mean? You're slipping, dude. Like stopping isn't an option, right? My mom's like, if you want to drink and do drugs in this household, like that's not happening. Like if you want to drink and do drugs, you can go out on the streets and get loaded and do what you want, but you're not going to do it here, right? But I hear I got to hide it better. Right. And if you're new, the old timers told me, they said, you have a hearing problem, kid. And because I don't hear that. Right. Like alcohol is already making decisions in my life. When I took my first drink alcohol, I put alcohol into this alcoholic body at 9 years old. Subconsciously, something inside of me said, I can't wait to do it again. And the next time I did it again, and I didn't have the ability to stop at 17. Right. Alcohol was already making choices for me. And I came home one night, a month later, and my mom found another bag of weed in her hand. And my mom said, you're kicked out. And I walked in my bedroom at 17. I packed my backpack and I walked by my mom and I looked at her right in the eyes. And I said, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. And I watched my mom's heart break right in that moment. Now, my mom was my hero. My mom was my best friend. My mom was everything to me. The last thing I would do would disrespect my mom. The last thing I would do would tell her that I hate her and she was never going to see me again. There is no doubt in my mind that alcohol was already making choices for me at 17 years old. And I felt that sense of shame and I felt that sense of guilt. And I don't know how you deal with shame and guilt, but I grabbed my mom by the collar and I slammed her against the wall. F you. I hate you. You're never going to see me again. And I put my hands on my mom and I left that night at 17 years old. I went to an abandoned house we were getting loaded at. And I took my first hit of crack cocaine at 17 years old. Disease of alcoholism is progressive. I've already identified my alcoholism at 17. We're going to fast forward to when I was 27 years old, when I got sober. Well, we'll go back to when I was 25, actually. When I was 25 years old, and I could turn it on, right? I'm a charmer, right? I could get into a room. I could get the interview, right? I get an interview, and I could sell the guy to hire me, right? Now, yeah, you know, applying your motivation and your skill, that's a different ballgame, but I could get the job. And when I was 25 years old, I was the assistant director for a YMCA after school program, watching elementary school kids. And I would wake up every morning and put a half a pint back just to get to school. And then I would call the drug connect, and he would bring me heroin to school. And I got busted shooting heroin. I know it's AA, right? But hold my hand here. I got busted shooting heroin in the bathroom at an elementary school. And the director said, "You're fired." And I called my mom and I said, "Man, the only good thing in my life, I need help." And my mom sent me to Betty Ford Treatment Center. And I love Betty Ford Treatment Center. They did your laundry for you. They cooked you food. They said, so I guess why I didn't really like Betty Ford, because I wasn't allowed to fraternize. I asked, I was like, what does that mean? They're like, "You're not allowed to talk to the girls." Oh man. I was like, this sucks, you know? I'm a rule follower for like 3 days. I'm in the infirmary getting my meds, my detox meds. And all of a sudden I was like, I think I need to turn around. And I turned around and she came walking in and we caught eyes. Oh my God, man. We fell in love, dude. All in like 3.5 seconds. We were married. We had kids. We had a little yellow house with a white picket fence. And I knew she loved me as much as I loved her. So I wrote her a note and I gave her a note. And the next day she gave me a note and I gave her a note. And 28 days later, we fell in love and we never even had a conversation. And you know, that rehab or that newcomer love, it's like real, real love, you know, like high, high, high love, you know? And I had the pom poms out. And I'm like, recovery's the number one thing. And I'm doing book studies, because it's easy to be in recovery if you're in love, you know? And my counselor's like, "You got to do a first step." I said, "I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, sir. My life's unmanageable." He's like, "You're getting it quick, you know?" And one day I went to get my note and she didn't give me a note. And I don't know how you are when you don't feel love, but I'm like suicidal. I'm like, screw it. I'm going to kill myself. I'm leaving treatment. You know, I went to my room for like 3 days. They're like, "You need to go to group." I'm like, screw group. I'm over it, you know? One day they're like, "You need to go to group." So I went to group, like Eeyore. And she was standing there at group and she gave me a note and it was like getting hugged by God. I mean, dude, all of a sudden the clouds parted. I was like, "Oh my God, recovery's awesome, man. Let's do the book studies," you know? And I was back in the game, cheerleader for AA. And I ran back to my counselor, Mark's office, and said, "Mark," I said, "I've come to believe there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to sanity." And I truly believed it was God. I had no idea it was that note, you know? He told me I had to do a 9-month program, which I thought was a little extreme. So I wrote my girlfriend a note. And I was like, "Hey, I got to do a 9-month program." And it was like 9 pages and just like feeling sorry for myself. And she wrote me a note back and she said, someone sent me a direct message about Jesus. Sorry. And so she sent me a note back and on the top of the note in all capital letters, it said, "I have to do a 9-month program too." And I was like, holy cow, this is that God's will that Mark's talking about, right? Like this dude, it's all aligning. The crystals are aligning. The stars are aligning. We went to the same treatment center. We have the same sobriety date. Like, oh man, I ran back to Mark's office and I said, "I'm making a decision to turn my will and life over to the power of her as I understand God." And I got coined out most likely to succeed guy. Everyone in treatment was like, "We're all going to get loaded, but you're going to be the one that stays sober," you know? And I went to Betty Ford as a heroin addict, not knowing what alcoholism was. Now, I can tell you my story in retrospect, and I can show you how I was an alcoholic at 17. I didn't know this at the time. right? And I got on the plane to go to Hawaii with my sober girlfriend to go to sober living. And the flight attendant asked me what I wanted to drink. Well, I want a Heineken because I'm not alcoholic. And she brought me a Heineken. And if you're new, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. I mean, the old timers would tell me that when I go in and out of AA, and I'm like, you need to drink through that, old man, you know? And, but it's the first drink that gets you drunk, because here's how it happens. I took the first drink, and in the middle of the first drink, I knew that there wasn't enough alcohol on this plane to get me to Hawaii. And I ordered another drink, and that drink ordered another drink, and that drink ordered another drink. And when I got off the plane after 12 or 13 Heinekens later, I'm standing there going, sober living or bar? Same decision I was at when I was 17, when my mom said, stay here and be sober, got on the streets. I lost the power of choice when I put the first one in. I lost the power of choice once I put the first one in. But I didn't know that at the time. I said, I'll go to sober living tomorrow. I never met that girl in Hawaii. She ended up overdosing and dying. But I would go, but my mom found Al-Anon. I taught my mom how to wire money. My mom would wire me $150 every week for 10 years. Well, until she went to Al-Anon, it started changing, because she would say no, you know, and she was like, no is a full sentence. You know, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, well, mom, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation. And she'd wire me the money. She felt guilty. And, you know, if you want to kick me out of the house, and I'd hit her with all the guilt buttons and the love buttons. And I came out of a blackout, sexually assaulted. I'm a straight man, but I was sexually assaulted by gay men for the first time. Had blood coming out of every hole in my body. I looked around the bathroom. There was no towel. There was no clothes. And I walked down the hallway of shame. There's three guys on the couch. I didn't know who they were, but there were some clothes that looked like mine. I put them on. I went outside, and I knew that if I could get a pint of tequila, everything would be all right. And there was a liquor store across the street, and I reached my hand in my pockets to see if I had any money. And I pulled out a guy's number from AA. Had enough money to make a phone call. God's will, God's plan, coincidence. I picked up the phone. I said, man, I need help. And the guy said, can you promise me not to drink? It's going to take me 20 minutes to get there. He promised me not to drink. I made a promise I won't drink. Now, I've been in and out of AA promising I'm not going to drink, and I leave AA drunk just like that. Drunk just like that. Every time. And I said to that guy, I said, I promise I won't drink, but you need to hurry up. And I walked in that liquor store, I got a pint of tequila, and I was drunk just like that. And I came to on the North Shore of Hawaii at an AA camp out. And I think you guys have like camp outs and conventions, and you old timers will know what the countdown is, right? Well, if you're new, it's this thing on like Saturday night, and they count down from the person with the most sobriety, and they go all the way down to the newest newcomer. And then they bring the old timer and the newcomer up there, and the old timer usually gives the newcomer a book. Well, here I am coming out of a blackout, shaking a man's hand with 44 years of sobriety, and he's giving me a big book. And I'm like, I want to punch this old guy. But this little old lady named Myrtle comes up to me, and she goes, hi, son. She says, my name's Myrtle. And I'm thinking, I don't care, Myrtle, you know, but I'm a people pleaser. So I go, oh, hi, Myrtle. You know, she's like, come with me, son. And she took me to she's like, you're going to serve ice cream at the ice cream social. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not, Myrtle. Okay. What do you want me to do? Right. And the ice cream's like, cause I'm shaking. And she goes, I got a better job for you. And she gives me a trash bag, and I get a trash bag, and she goes, you just do what I do. And she grabs a piece of trash and she puts it in her bag. And I grab a piece of trash and I put it in my bag. And for the next 30 minutes, me and Myrtle picked up trash. I'll never forget Myrtle. I'll never forget her. We sat down on the stoop. She put her arm around me and she said, how do you feel, kid? And for the first time in a really long time, I didn't think about killing myself and I didn't think about drinking. But if service was enough, I'd have never picked back up. That guy took me back to that liquor store where he picked me up from, and he dropped me off. I went in that liquor store, got another pint of tequila, and I was drunk just like that. And I called my mom. I said, mom, I need help. She said, I can't help you. She said, I'll get you a plane ticket back to California, but that's about it. And she got me a plane ticket, and I got off the plane, and the last year and a half of my drinking was downtown LA on Skid Row. And I got sober on the 23rd of October, 2002. And on the 20th of October, 2002, I came to after being sexually assaulted for the 12th time by gay men. And I'd walk into gay bar and I'd flirt with enough men to get enough alcohol in my body and hope that I'd make it out before I blacked out, is what was going on. And I came out of that motel and I said, this time is going to be different. This time is going to be different. Alcohol is not my problem. And I walk in that liquor store, I get another pint of tequila. I black out, and 3 days later, I come to on the 23rd of October. And what happened for me that day was that I had a spiritual defense that walked right in between me and the thought of that first drink. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind, the big book talks about. And every morning I would come to, and my first thought would be to go get a pint of tequila. And well, for that morning, when I came to, the first thought said, call your mom and ask for help. And I picked up the phone. I said, Mom, I need help. And my mom said, I can't help you anymore. She said, there we are. And someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. She says, if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. And she hung up on me. And these two goopy dudes from AA came. The guy that she called had just got a call from his doctor, was diagnosed with 4-stage cancer. And he knew exactly what to do. And he went and grabbed a new guy. And they went to that motel and they picked me up. And the guy walked in. He goes, my name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. He crazy hair. He's loud. He was obnoxious. And the other guy was on a walker. He's like, my name's John. I got 90 days sober. You know what I mean? I was like, good for you, old man. You know, and I didn't say that. But now if you're new, I didn't believe in God until I was 10 years sober. But I know today that when I called and asked my mom for help, God heard that prayer. And I walked right into God's grace. Because if you're new, what they used to tell us, man, they would say, just get in the car, kid. I'll never forget the 3-hour drives to go hear them speak for 45 minutes to drive 3 hours back and hear their goofy stories. You know what I mean? But that guy said, get in the van. And they told me their story. And before he knew it, I ended up at a place called Charlie Street, which is a low bottom indigent detox. It's a 10-day detox in here. And it's ran by AA guys. And I sat down on the couch and Jack knew that I didn't identify with his story. And he called over this guy, Pete. Pete came over and Pete was tattooed from head to toe. And Pete said, man, when I drink, I end up in jail. And I perked up and I was like, man, I said to him, I said, Pete, the only time I can stop drinking is when I end up in jail. He said, really, what happened? I said, man, this one time I drank and I didn't think, I thought this time was going to be different. I ended up back in jail. He said, hey, he goes, hey, John, come on over, meet this new guy, Pat. And then John shares and John drinks and John goes to jail. And then John grabbed Howard and Howard came over and Howard drank and went to jail. And then Howard's like, hey, Henry, meet this guy. And all of a sudden there was like 10 of us on this couch talking, telling our stories, talking about drinking and going to jail. And then Jack squeezed on over and he said, Pat, when you're in jail, why'd he pick back up? And I said the first honest thing I'd ever said. I looked at Jack and I said, I don't know why I picked back up. That was the first time I did not know. I didn't have an excuse. I didn't drink over my trauma. I didn't drink over my depression. I didn't drink over being awkward poopy pants. I didn't drink over mommy issues, daddy issues, girlfriend issues. I looked at him and I said, I don't know. And he started to talk about the thinking that preceded his first drink. And I started to realize that every time I stopped, I looked at my thinking said, crack cocaine's my problem. Alcohol's not your problem. Methamphetamine's my problem. Alcohol's not your problem. Drug after drug after drug was always the problem, which always got me busted. But every time I got out of jail, I picked up a pint of tequila at that liquor store when I got out. And every time I drank tequila, I ended up back in jail. And he looked at me and he said, Pat, if you can concede both propositions, physical, that when you put alcohol into your body, you can't stop until you end up back in jail. And he said, more importantly, that when you're sober, sober mind, trying to figure out how you can enjoy with your drinking without consequences, he said, you might be alcoholic. And I'm so grateful that he didn't tell me I was an alcoholic because I'd have fought him tooth or nail why I wasn't, because I was on the defense. He left me with might, which meant he left me with me. I could not lie to myself in that moment. He had laid down the facts about himself, which allowed me to look at the facts within myself. And at that point, I couldn't lie to myself. When I conceded to my innermost self, I said, Jack, I said, I'm alcoholic. And the guy lit up like a chandelier. He's like, I got a new guy. You know what I mean? He was so excited, man. And he's like, do you believe in God? And I was like, no, if this is a God program, I'm out, dude. He's like, okay, what about a higher power? I'm like, oh God, word games, dude, higher power. I know you're leaning to the God thing, you know? He's like, okay. He's like, have you ever gone to the ocean? I'm like, well, yeah, I live by the ocean. He goes, have you ever tried to like stop a wave? I was like, you can't stop a wave, Jack. He goes, that's a power greater than yourself. You know, and I was like, dude, this guy's an idiot, you know? And he saw me like thinking, you know, because I'm a thinker, man. I'm a smart guy, man. I'm so smart. I end up in AA. But anyways, I'm smart, right? And I'm intellectual and I lean on the intellect. And he switched the conversation and he talked about that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous gave him joy when he walked his daughter down the aisle to get married. He talked about the happiness that he felt on the inside watching his grandchildren play a game of baseball. And then he looked at me and he said, Pat, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous the greatest gift they gave me is that I can fit in my Earth suit today. And I thought, how did he know about the Earth suit, right? And he gave me hope. And the hope was that if I did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I too can feel joy for another human being. I too can feel happiness for another human being. That guy was a big service and triangle, dude, service triangle, triangle circle, unity, man. He would take me to every, I think he wanted to get a girlfriend, but we went to like 15 meetings a week, man. And we went to every AA potluck, you know what I mean? And he's like, you need to get five numbers every meeting you go to. And you have to call him every day. There wasn't a suggestion. He's like, you're either going to do it or you're going to die. You know, I don't want to die. And so, and he just got me in the middle of you. And then he goes, you need to get a commitment. And so, you know, I'm an overachiever. So I got a commitment at every meeting I went to. You know, I was the literature guy, I was the coffee guy with the big racks and the box of books and the big coffee pots and the big coffee can. I didn't even have a car, you know? And I was like, how am I going to get the coffee pot there? He's like, well, why don't you call Morgan? And maybe Morgan will give you a ride, you know? And so I call Morgan. I, can you give me a ride in the meeting? I wouldn't tell him about the coffee pots because I didn't think he would take me if I had all that stuff, you know? And then Morgan would get there and go, oh, Morgan, I forgot to tell you, I got the coffee pots. And he's like, oh, no problem. He's like, I'll make coffee with you. You know, we are an AA, you know? And then we get to the meeting and he helps carry him in and we make the coffee together. And I learned how to have friendships through being a service here. But I remember I look at, I said, why do I got to do all this service work, man? Everyone's getting girlfriends. And I got, it's like, man, I'm over here being a service all the time. And he looked at me and he said, son, he said, your whole life you've been a taker. He said, what we're going to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, turn you into a giver. And I had no clue, man. You know, I made amends to my mom at 90 days sober. And I was made, my first amends was at 4 days sober. And if I wouldn't have talked so long already about other things, I'd tell you some other stories. But my first amends was to my mom, you know, and my good AA mom. And I owe my mom hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, from wiring me money. And I said, Mom, I said, remember that one time I told you I got in the accident? She said, yeah. I said, it was a lie. She goes, I know. I said, hey, Mom, remember that other time I told you I got in an accident? She goes, I know, it was a lie too. I said, hey, Mom, remember that one time I told you I was going to get close? She goes, just stop right there. She goes, I knew every time that you called and asked for money, I knew it was a lie. I said, well, then why'd you give me the money? She said, I thought that if I gave you the money one more time, it might save your life long enough for you to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, I sat up every night terrified that I'd get the call that you bled out and died. Man, it was like getting kicked right in the gut, man. No. It wasn't that I lied to my mom. That wasn't the harm. The harm was that I robbed my mom of her security day in and day out. I said, Mom, what can I do to make this right? I was crying. I said, Mom, what can I do to make this right? And she said, you know, I just want you to get in the middle of AA and help as many people as you can. That's all I want from you. Gave my mom a big hug, man. I said, I love you so much. And I came to believe in AA. I came to believe in AA in step two. I made a decision to do what the sponsor told me to do. He told me to make amends. I made the amends. And in that moment, man, the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, through members of Alcoholics Anonymous guiding me, right? The healing started to happen. And I ran back to my sponsor. I said, man, this is awesome, dude. I came to believe in AA. It's great. He said, what about the money? I said, she didn't want the money. He said, yeah, but AA wants you to pay it back. You know, I thought, oh man, why did I tell this guy that? He's like, yeah, you're going to pay her $25 at a time. I said, I owe her hundreds of thousands. How am I going to pay her all that money? He goes, you're going to pay it $25 at a time. You know, the little Yoda things that the sponsors say, you know, I'm thinking, well, $25 at a time. And so I write, and then he goes, I want you to write a note that says, Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today, and leave her $25. And so I'd write the note, and once a week I'd put the money there. And 6 months in, he's like, you're doing such a good job. I want you to write a note every day, but leave the money once a week. And so I did that, you know, and at 2 years sober, man, I didn't want to write the notes, man. It was changing. I was like telling my mom I loved her. She was my hero. She was my best friend. I was like having a love affair with my mom, which is kind of weird, you know? And so I call my sponsor. I'm like, I'm not writing this note anymore. And he said, Pat, you don't have to do it if you don't want. I said, oh, awesome. I'm off the hook. He said, but how free do you want to be, kid? Write the notes, you know what I mean? So I wrote the notes, and 5 years sober, my mom sat me down and she told me, she's like, I just want you to know you're the director of my will. I'm thinking, I don't want that responsibility. I didn't say it. I thought it. And she said, you know, I don't want the money anymore. And I thought, good, because I don't want to pay it. I didn't say it, but I thought it, right? She said, but I still want the notes, you know? And man, I had no clue what that was going to do. I tell you, I wrote my mom a note. Called my mom sent her a text just about every day until the day that my mom died, you know. But two of the greatest gifts other than that is the ability to look at you guys in the eyes and tell you I love you and I appreciate you today. The greatest gift that that action gave me is the gift of looking at the new person in the eye and tell you that I love you and I appreciate you today. And if you're new, you don't have to live the way you've been living again if you don't want it, as long as you're willing to do a few simple things around Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to love anybody. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous not prostitute myself one more day for one more of anything, you know? And I've been given so much more, you know? AA boy met AA girl on AA campus. And well, what happened was she got pregnant. It was in Vegas. So what happened in Vegas didn't stay in Vegas, you know? But I'm so grateful for the women in AA because I was terrified of being a dad. I don't have a dad. How am I supposed to be a dad? And I'd call you guys. I'd be like, he has the hiccups. What do I do? They're like, I don't know. Wait, what do you do when you have the hiccups? I'm like, I don't know. I wait. They're like, perfect. And you'd hang up on me. And you taught me how to be a father. I would come to AA and I'd hear you share your pain about the father of your child not showing up for visit. And through your pain, I learned how to show up for my kid. You would talk about your pain about the father of your child not paying child support. And through your pain, I learned how to be financially responsible for my son. And I want to thank you for continuing to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and sharing your pain because you taught me how to be a father. But my kid would cry, and I don't deal with tears, man. Vulnerability, vulnerability, you know what I mean? And so I put him on my head one time, and he didn't cry up there. I was like, oh, I gave myself a pat on the back, you know? And I thought he did it all on your own. And I was at my house, and my sponsee was there, and I stood up. And I put my head on my head, and you guys see the ceiling fan above me? Well, I accidentally put my son's head right into a ceiling fan. It was like, whack, 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 you know? And my sponsee was like, and I was like, and I just handed my kid to my sponsee. Now, I didn't believe in God until I was 10 years sober, which I'm going to get into that story. But what happened was the old timers told me, I don't care if you believe or not. What I want you to do is I want you to get on your knees. And when I was brand new, and they say, God, I don't believe that you exist. But the old timers tell me I got to pray and then tell God all your problems or tell the universe your problems. And so I got go in the background. Like, God, I don't believe that you exist. I just put my son's head in the ceiling fan. I don't know what to do. I heard a voice that said, call the doctor, man. You're talking to the wrong person. So I called the doctor and the doctor told me what to do. And I grabbed my kid and I looked at him and there was nothing wrong with him. He had a little bump on his head. But what happened for me in that moment was I cared more about another human being than I care about myself. That sponsor guy didn't lie to me when he said that I'm going to care more about another human being than I care about myself. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous for me is that selfish and self-centered walked in the door on October 23rd, 2002. Each and every day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I listen to you tell me your story, which gives me hope to go out there and live my life. I practice in the principles in all my affairs a little more each day. I care more about you than I care about myself, you know? And I'm going to end on two stories, but my 8 years sober, what happened was I got really involved in AA. I was speaking all over the place. I was in WIPAW and I was just, I thought I was like the king of AA and thought I was a big shot around here. And I was just, I was terrified of relationships. You know, I ended up cheating on my son's mom. I cheated on every girlfriend I had 8 years sober, man. And I would go home every night, want to put a bullet in my mouth. I wasn't proud of that behavior, man. I could not do it, you know? Eight and a half years sober, I'm driving my car 100 miles an hour down the road, and I see enough cars to barrel my car. And as I'm about to lean my car into this oncoming cars, I heard a voice in the back seat that said, call that guy Jonathan from your Tuesday night meeting. And I picked up the phone. It was midnight, and the guy, he answered the phone in one ring, and I said, I'm going to kill myself, you know. And he said, I've been waiting for this call for a year. And he was laying in bed with his wife, two kids in the bedroom next to him. And he said, before you kill yourself, will you meet me at Denny's? And I said, all right, I'll meet you there. And he stayed on the phone with me for 30 minutes until he walked into Denny's and I walked into Denny's because he knew I wasn't going to show up. And he got sat down and he opened the big book to page 52 and he started reading about these bedevilments. Having trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control my emotional nature, prey to misery and depression. He looked at me and he said, what you think is a broken relationship? He said, what you're suffering from is untreated alcoholism. And he talked about wanting to kill himself at 17 years sober and reaching out to a man by the name of Luther Wood. And Luther Wood being suicidal and reaching out to a man by the name of Clint Hodges. And Clint Hodges at 20 years sober, suicidal, reached out to a man by the name of Don Pritz. And in that lineage, I had hope. You guys one more time gave me hope. that I wasn't alone. And I had to separate my prejudices from God. And I had to ask myself deep down within what God was for me. And I came to find out for me that God was love, that God has been right here within me. This whole, my whole life, God's been right in my chest. I was always searching out for God, right? I always had the punishing God, the one that was up there with the robe and the staff. He's like testing me all the time. You know what I mean? And I had to separate myself from that. And God came love for me. He looked at me and said, Pat, what are the things that are blocking you from God? And I wrote these seven things down. And the thing that was on there that I couldn't let go of was what you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous thought of me. My image was more important in Alcoholics Anonymous than anything else. And he said, I want you to say a prayer. God, please take away this thing that's standing in the way of me having a better relationship with you. And I went every morning, I looked at the list. Every morning I looked at the list. And one day, man, I was suicidal until I was 10. I was suicidal for a year and a half. And in that moment, I surrendered, man. I said, having a relationship with God, letting go of what you guys think of me, and having that relationship is more important than what you guys think of me. And I crossed it off the list, and I got with my sponsor, and I got on my knees, and I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the power of love, which is within, and my life changed. And I went through the steps, and I was suicidal, and I don't mean just like I think I'm going to kill myself. My sponsor would literally say, meet me at the meeting before you kill yourself, because I'd like to say goodbye to you. It was that serious. And I would call him and I would go to the meeting and he would say, kid, he said, I love you. I hope that you make it through the night until tomorrow. And what I want you to do is I want you to think about making amends to your father. I never met my dad. And I would call him the next day and I'd call him the next day. And one day I pulled over on the bridge. I said, I'm going to jump. I can't do it. I said, God, I said, you have 10 seconds because I'm going to jump. And I got out of my car and I got to the headlight of my car and my phone rang. And it was a kid named, I answered, and it was a kid named Chris. And Chris said, Pat, I want to call and thank you. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you were kind to me. But I wanted to call and let you know that I'm leaving AA because I'm going to go get loaded. And I said, oh, I said, Chris, I said, we don't drink one day at a time here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to talk about the insanity of the first drink, the thinking for me that always drove me back to alcohol. And I said, Chris, it's 7 o'clock. I said, there's a meeting starting in 30 minutes. Will you meet me at the meeting? And Chris said, yes. And I got in my car and I drove to the Laguna Beach Canyon Club, 30 miles south from where I was at. And I pull in the Canyon Club and Chris is standing there and Chris is crying and Chris gives me a big hug and Chris thanks me for saving his life. And then Chris asked me to be his sponsor. And I looked at Chris and I said, I would love to be your sponsor. Now, I didn't tell Chris that I was going to kill myself. Chris saved my life that day. I don't know how God answers your prayers. But God always answers my prayer with a new man, day in and day out. I don't know why I'm supposed to be here. David asked me to talk, right? Like, I'm literally booked through July to speak, but something inside of me said I was supposed to be here, right? I don't book too much out because I got my kid, you know what I mean? And he understands the importance of Alcoholics Anonymous, but something inside of me said you're supposed to be here today. Now, Chris, 2 months later, overdosed and died. Chris saved my life. I'll be forever indebted to Chris that day. And I went into my room that night and I was cussing out God. Why do I have to help another alcoholic? Why do I have to do this? I feel like I can't do it anymore. And I was pushed off my couch and I started to make amends to a man I never met. Remember that little boy in the baseball field who looked at his mom and said, if I only had a dad, it'd never happen. I used that man in every relationship in my life. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be a friend to you. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be a boyfriend to you. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to show up for work. If I only had. And in that moment, the victim was pulled out and the power of God went deep down within. I got off the floor that day and I walked in my bedroom and I passed out just like that. I haven't had to act out in that behavior since I was 8 years sober. And I got to talk about my mom and I'll end. My mom was on oxygen. She was diagnosed with COPD. And me and my mom literally spoke all over the country together. My mom was an active member of AA, really active member. And we were at the home group Wednesday night and we left the home group and my mom called and she judged the speaker like she did every week, you know? And that night she went home and she couldn't breathe. And they rushed her to the emergency room and she had a tumor that grew and blocked the passageway and they cored out the tumor. They diagnosed her with cancer and they put her on hospice. And she called me the next day. She goes, I'm only going on hospice, get off hospice. Don't worry about it. You know, my mom was 40. She was on right before her 40th birthday party. She's on life machine. They pulled her off. She lived, we think, just to get to her AA party, but she lived. And I thought she was going to make it. You know what I mean? I thought for sure. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, she was off hospice, back at her meetings, you know, and she's back at her women's meeting and reading the book and doing the deal. And Wednesday night, went to the speaker meeting. On the way home, called me to judge the speaker. And that night she went home and the tumor had grown back. We rushed her to the hospital, and that was the end, right? I knew it was the end. And I would go home I'd go to my mom's house and I'd sit with her every day. And she would look at me and she'd say, "Don't sit here and watch me die." She said, "Go out there and live your life, but make sure you come back tomorrow and give me a kiss, will you?" And I was going to Idaho to speak at a young people's conference, and I didn't want to miss my mom's last breath. I was going to be gone for 4 days, and I said a prayer, "God, please, what am I supposed to do?" And I heard it deep down in that meditation said, "You need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous." I didn't like that prayer or that answer, so I prayed again the next day. And the answer came to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't like that answer, so I prayed 3 days in a row, got the same answer. Then I called my sponsor, and my sponsor said, "Well, what did God tell you to do?" I said, "God told me to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "Well, then there's your answer." And so I flew to Idaho to go speak at Wacky Paw, the Western Area Conference, Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got there and I was speaking Saturday night, and I got a call literally at 12 o'clock that day. It said, "Your mom's been unresponsive. She hasn't moved. You need to hurry up and get back. She's waiting to say goodbye to you before she goes into the other world," or whatever, you know, with things we say to people, you know. And so I got down on my knees. I said, "God, what do you want me to do? Be direct, because I need to know what to do." And the message came, "You need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous." And it was the hardest thing. I'm telling you, to have faith. Faith for me is a confident trust born of experience. It was the hardest thing. I gave a talk that night. The next day, I flew home. I landed and I raced to my mom's house, and I walked into my mom's bedroom, and she sat straight up like this and put her arms out. Spirit felt spirit walk in the room that day. And I walked into my mom's arms, and she put her arms around me, and she said, "Pat, I want you to know you did the right thing." She held on to me. She said, "I love you. I love you. I love you." And that was the last words that my mom said. The 10th of January, 2018, my mom died and my heart broke, or 19 and my heart broke, you know. But what happened in that moment? I can't force a surrender and I can't force a forgiveness. But by continuing to show up to Alcoholics Anonymous, to continue to say yes when David asked me to talk, to continue to show up when it's divinely inconvenient, not when it's convenient, when it's inconvenient, to show up in those times, be a service to you, to take directions from goofy sponsors, right, that I don't think they know what they're talking about most of the time, but they got them little Yoda tricks, you know. By continuing to do what you guys tell me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, in that moment, right, all my mom wanted for me was to get in the middle of AA, and I honored my mom's word to the day that my mom died. I honored my mom's amends to the day I died. There was a level of forgiveness that was so profound, I can't put into words. So profound, you know. I kissed my mom on the cheek, on the forehead that night. I said, "Patio, I want you to know I'll carry on your legacy from this day until the day I die." If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, my message tonight is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. And it's my prayer every night when I go to bed that you find a sponsor that cares more about your life than the way you feel. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic, and I love you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. That's amazing. Everybody's allowed to unmute and thank Pat.
Pat,
thank you so much, Pat.
That was incredible.
Thank you, sir.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. I'm gonna take the meeting back again. As usual, I'll have to compose myself and remember what I'm doing here. Let's give Pat a break for a moment. We'll do a little business here. Let you breathe in and out. Whew, man, that's powerful. Okay, what are we doing? We're still at an AA meeting. I'm passing the Seventh Tradition basket. I put a link in the chat. Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. I'm going to remind everybody again that Larry is just sitting there behind the user questions, waiting for your questions to come in. Please feel free. Oh, you know what? I crushed the chat, so let me open that up. Okay, Larry, you already did that. Awesome. Thank you. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?
Hey, y'all, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hello, Pat, Ebony.
Thank you so much for that. Let me focus. Okay, Norfolk District 14, April 28th, the fourth Wednesday of every month, we're hosting a 12 concepts workshop. We have 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. This month, we're having Michaeline, who is a former, VAC delegate. She's going to be speaking on the fourth concept for about 20 to 30 minutes. We'll take a break, open it up for questions and answers. It's been a great workshop so far. We would love to have you there. It's been spicy conversation. Steering committee, intergroup, VAC, all of that service structure talk. It's a great way to find out how to get in the middle and how I can be of service. So that's April 28th at 7 p.m. and I hope to see y'all there. Thanks.
Thank you, Ebony. Anybody else? Could somebody in the home group check me? Is our workshop on Wednesday, June 2nd? Do I have that right?
Oh my God. I'm so sorry that I forgot about that. Yes. This home group is having a family afterward workshop on June 2nd, Wednesday, 7 p.m. It's Polly P. and
James L.
James L.
That's a mother and son combo.
Yep. It's going to be a blast. They've got a nice little thing put together that they've done before. And I believe we will be using this Sunday night link for that, correct? And it'll be available soon if it isn't already on tidewaterintergroup.org.
We're going to use the Monday night link and we'll start getting a little flyer out and all that kind of stuff. It'll be in the Harmony this week, but we just wanted to start mentioning it. And maybe Pat could give us the sobriety count, but I think there's between the two of those people, we got about 60, 70 years of of recovery between Polly and her son, James. Yeah, so that's going to be Wednesday, June 2nd, 7 p.m., the Monday night Simple Actions link, and we'll get a flyer out on that. I just couldn't remember the date. Thanks, Mo. Anybody else? All righty. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here, right here, after we close the meeting. Please, please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. If you're shy, feel free to send a message to info or an email to info@simpleactions.net. So we got some questions coming in. Please keep them coming. Pat, that was absolutely amazing. Broke my heart in a million pieces. And thank you for it. I'm curious, in 1990, I fell in love for a summer out in Laguna Beach and got to go to meetings every day at the old Canyon Club down there. And I always imagine when Clancy's talking about living in a car, in the abandoned car, I always imagine him at that clubhouse. But I don't even know. I think that clubhouse moved, but I don't know if there's any fun stories about the old Laguna Canyon Club you might offer.
It actually did move to a very nice place. They had a member who passed away, donated all kinds of properties. They have a really, really nice a facility there, but it was in that rundown spot, and Lou was the coffee bar manager, and he served chili. Man, I ate chili all the time, and they had a pool table, and me and the little kids from AA, we would throw these bottles in this big hole, and so I anyways, I fell out of a dumpster, hit my head, and the whole meeting came out to help me. But that old Canyon Club was, you know, a lot of history in that club. Part of actually Narcotics Anonymous came out of a young people's meeting there because they were mad at the AAs there. So some of the literature is kind of some history that's.
Right on. Wait, is that where they put Clancy up in the?
No, that was in Los Angeles.
Okay. Thank you for correcting that. Can you share anything that you learned from your time in jail? Somebody asked.
Oh man, time in jail. Which time? So I'll tell the story about that because I didn't learn anything while I was getting loaded, but. At 4 days of sobriety, my sponsor was like, you need, because it was a 10-day detox. So he's like, you got to go to sober living. And I was like, well, no, actually, I got to go to the Salvation Army. He's like, why do you have to go to the Salvation Army? I was like, well, because I'm court ordered there. He's like, I told him I had a warrant. So he was like, oh, great. He's like, we're going to go to see the judge tomorrow at 4 days sober. I was like, what, dude? Like, can we get like 90 days, get some letters? He's like, no, you're going to go tomorrow. And so I went that next day and I was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. And, in the middle of sentencing, the judge released me to the Salvation Army. 90 days in, I decided to leave to go do this other thing. And he sentenced me to 100 days in jail. I was about 100 days sober. And so I went to jail and I was making amends. And I what I came to learn was that for the first time, if I stayed sober and did AA, I wasn't going to have to go back to jail. I felt freedom handcuffed going to jail because I was on my ninth step. And I got there and they were, you know, they offering me all kinds of drugs and alcohol and I was refusing it. And I was studying the big book and I was going to AA and I was going to church. And this guy asked me, he said, he's like, how are you staying sober? He's like, I'm looking at 10 years in prison. And I shared my experience, my strength and hope with him. And I told him that I was looking at time in prison and I told the judge I needed help. And so he went to go tell the judge that he needed help. And that day he came back and gave me a hug and said, they're releasing me to a program rather than 10 days in jail. And he asked me to help him get sober. And in jail at 100 days sober, I sat down and I read the big book like my sponsor had did for me. I was sharing my experience, strength, and hope. You'd call it sponsorship at 100 days sober. And we did a third step on our knees in that institution. He started writing inventory. I got released. He got released. And every Sunday I went to the Salvation. I rode a bus for 2.5 hours to go with that guy. And about a month and a half in, he ended up getting loaded and leaving. And I thought to myself, what did I do wrong? Man, why couldn't, and I came to realize I couldn't get anyone sober. But what happened for me was that I learned that one alcoholic working with another alcoholic allowed me to stay sober one day at a time at an institution, you know, and I caught fire for AA at that moment, you know, and that was a gift that jail gave me, freedom and the fire to help another alcoholic. So.
Thank you. I have another question submitted. You said you didn't believe in God until 10 years into recovery. What advice or experience maybe do you have for newcomers that don't believe in God?
Yeah. So my prayer was, God, I don't believe that you exist. Please show me. And then I would waffle on about my problems, right? Like I was open to like, to seeing, like to finding something, you know, like it wasn't going to be God because God was related to a religion. And even though they said it's a spiritual program, like I was really smart, you know, I thought it was. And so I just took the directions that they told me to do in AA. They told me to meditate. I tried. I couldn't do it. You know, I think meditation's the hidden gem around here, but that's not the question. But it's about, I just continue to do Alcoholics Anonymous. I showed up and I did AA. I got involved in service work. You know, I got involved in my meetings. I went to fellowship. I did everything in AA. And really, AA was my God, right? I had a dependence upon Alcoholics Anonymous, which is what happened at 8 years. My dependence on AA had to shift to a bigger power. But I did AA. And I came to believe that the people in AA weren't lying to me. They had good lives. And I wanted a good life. And so I did what they told me to do. And I hung out with them. And I did all the things they told me to do.
Right on. Let's see. You talked a lot about service. What service can I do if I'm not comfortable speaking?
Oh my gosh. I don't want to say my favorite, but because everything's my favorite. One of the things I really like to do, and I've had to learn how to do it in Zoom, but is to reach my hand out to the person that no one's talking to. right? The person that's on the back wall, because I'm awkward, weird, poopy pants guy still, you know what I mean? I don't want to be in the center of the attention, but you know, like, I'm going to pick on Q, but Q's in the back, you know, he's in the back by himself, you know, lurking around. And so I would talk to Q and I would put my hand out to him and talk to him about Alcoholics Anonymous, reaching out. I could, you know, all kinds of, I think that's an important one. Making calls to people, random calls. That was a good one for me. Like just calling people, and my sponsor would say, don't talk about your problems. Ask them how they're doing, you know, which was really hard. That was hard, you know, because I really didn't care about your problems. I wanted to talk about me, but I would do that. I'd take the direction. So that's some couple ideas.
Thank you. Could you go into more detail about how you applied step 6 and 7 to what people think of you?
Oh, wow. Great one. So I think for me personally, 6 and 7 are steps that kind of work me, right? Like, you know, I my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad, right? Which means I no longer have to judge, is it an asset or a liability? Is it a good thing, a bad thing, right? And it says something to the effect with, leave me with what I need to be of service to you and my fellows, right? Paraphrasing it. For me, that's what it said. And so when this last time I went through the steps, my sponsor didn't hand me a list of character defects. He handed me a list of old ideas. And I was able to create a list of new ideas with those old ideas. And I said the prayer, right? And then it's my responsibility to suit up and show up for life and for service in my life, right? What I'm saying is, God, here I am. I am going to go into this world, my authentic true self, right? Which is awkward and weird. And I'm going to get afraid, and I'm going to do what we call a character defect, but it's just, for me, it's covering up the fear. Right. And I'm going to go into the world and I'm just going to be myself. The game changer for me is in 8 and 9, right? When I sit down with someone and I admit the real harm, the harm that's caused. And I ask them, do you need to let me know of anything else I've done? And I sit and I listen. And then I ask, do you need to let me know how that made you feel? Game changer. I just want to get through the thing. And then they tell me how it made them feel. And then I ask, what can I do to make it right? Right. What is it that I can? And then those become my marching orders, which is how I live differently. Right. Then going and then reacting in the character defect. And if I had a 30 more minutes, we could talk about that more. But so hope that answered the question.
Well, it segues nicely into the next question. Did you have any amends that did not go well? And what did you do?
I love the not go well. So my best friend in high school, we partied together, but he said to me, he said, you need to stop doing cocaine. I was like, oh, I'll get a new friend. And, but we were best friends. And, when I like 20 something, he asked me if I was, you know, doing drugs. I told him I was, and he came, drove like 8 hours from my party, and I was, and he left, literally drove 8 hours, walked in, saw me, and drove 8 hours home. And so when I made amends to him, he was my best friend. And he said, I don't care about your 12 steps. You can F yourself. You can F the 12 steps. I don't want your stupid effing amends. And I was like, dude, what? They said that good things happen if you do the right thing. And so fast forward, I saw him, he's a UPS driver, like 7 years later. And he kind of waved to me. And then he friend requested me on Facebook. And I tried to reach out to make amends again, because I thought, well, maybe God's putting him in my life. And he didn't respond. And then he saw me, how I treat my son and how, my relationship with my son. And he sent me a message one day. And he said, Pat, I hope that I could be a father like you are. And my sponsor said, don't do anything. Just let it unfold. And it was so hard. I wanted to be, it's all about me, you know? And so then I saw him again on his UPS route. He pulled over and had lunch with me and my son's mom on his UPS route. And my sponsor said, just let it be. And last year, his mom died, who I was really close with. And I got to drive out to Las Vegas. I hadn't seen him in 18 years sober. 25. So I hadn't seen him in 20 years since the last time he came up. And I called him and said, I'm going to drive out to Vegas. And he said, you would do that? I said, absolutely. And I drove to Vegas to have dinner with him. We didn't make the amends. there's no amends, right? It was, and I sat down with him and we had dinner and he just cried on my shoulder and I held him, a grown man, 45 year old man, just in my arms. And I held him and I told him I loved him. I told him I cared about him. And I shared my experience about my mom dying. And I went to his house and I helped him clean out his mom's house. He ended up leaving. I stayed for 2 days to help the family. And he called and thanked me. And he said, I'm glad Alcoholics Anonymous is working in your life. You're a completely different man today. And I love you. And so there you go. That's an amends that didn't go well, but I hang in the pride, just continue to do AA and things unfold. So yeah, I guess it did turn out well, but.
Thank you. I have a question that was submitted. After all the time in AA, how would you define spiritual malady?
Oh my gosh. If I open to page 52 and I read it, it says, dun, da, 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 having trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control my emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people, right? Like my perception to my life, right? Like I get afraid. And then the hurt in my life, which we go to therapy for years, but is what all that stuff creates a delusion of what I think something is. And that delusion is separating me from you. And when I'm separated from you, I'm living in self, which is that self-centered stuff that goes on. That I'm a case builder. I don't know if there's any other case builders. I build a case that fast. You know what I'm saying? And before you know it, like, dude, I got you at a miles distance. I have the whole story down. And for me, that's the malady. It's the thing that's separating me from you. It's disconnecting me from you. And if you're new, right, like we put down the alcohol and we come to AA and then we learn how to have relationships with one another, you know, in the fourth step in the 12 and 12, it says our real problem is our real inability to form a true bond with another human being. And so that malady is me, is the sickness that keeps me distant from you. Right. Disease of alcoholism needs to keep me isolated and alone. So it tells me it's all right to drink. Right. That's why we get plugged in to the fellowship so that, you know, they talk about being in the middle of the herd, you know, be in the middle of the pack so you don't get plucked off all those things, which is the hardest thing for me to do is to be in the middle of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My sponsor says I'm ready to sponsor, but I don't think I'm ready. How do you know when you're ready?
Great question. I didn't feel adequate enough to give the message that my sponsor gave to me, right? Because my life changed. It was profound. I was like, how am I going to give that to somebody, right? And my sponsor said, you don't have to give that. You just need to share your experience with somebody, right? Like I can't transmit something I haven't got, the book talks about, but what I do have is I have my experience. And the more that I share my experience with others, the mending process happens, right? I get to understand this book on a deeper level. I get to understand myself on a deeper level. And the more it's like playing baseball, you know what I'm saying? The right fielder never practiced, so he stayed in the right field, you know? The more we do it, the more healing that occurs intuitively, internally, which means the deeper the experience. So when I was in jail with that guy, all I had was this. All I did was read it, share my experience to it, did action when there was an action. Now I have experience with being a dad. Now I have experience with all these different things, right, that I talk about today, which we had laughter and we had tears and there was, you know, a deeper spiritual significance in it all. So right now, where you're at is where you're at. And the greatest gift that AA gave me was the ability to put my hand out to the new person and tell them that they're not alone. And to sit and listen to their story. All of us just want to be heard. When we're new, we come here broken. We just want someone to listen to us. And like one of the greatest gifts you guys gave me was the ability just to listen to another alcoholic. So,
thank you. You mentioned that you thought meditation was the hidden gem around here. Would you like to do a minute or two on that?
Sure. So I didn't really start meditating until I don't know, but here's the deal. Like in order for me to start anything, like I need to have the best clothes. I need to look good at it. I need to have the right cushion. I don't have the right tapestry. Do I have the right incense? You know, and so I get all these things and it's still not right. Really, I'm just making excuses, right? And so I had a friend, his name's Eric Owens, out of Phoenix. He said to me, he said, Pat, he's like, I'm going to give you 5 minutes permission to be late to anything. Give an alcoholic 5 minutes to be late to work. I'm like, sign me up. What do I got to do? He's like, you just got to breathe, focus on your breath, discontinue thought. Focus on breath, discontinue thought. I was like, so he allowed me that I'm late to everything, right? Thing. And then I said, but I think all the time, I can't meditate. He goes, that's right. You're a human being. You're supposed to think. He said, but when you have a thought, discontinue thought, tell your thought, thank you for coming in. I'm letting you go. And then refocus on breath. I was like, that's all you do? He's like, yeah, that's it. And so I was like, all right. So I started doing that, right? And I started doing that every day, every day, every day, every day. So then COVID hits, right? COVID hits. And I'm like terrified, right? I was super spiritual that morning, did the prayers. Me and God were walking hand in hand, skipping along. COVID, right? Lockdown. Oh my God, right? I got so scared. I was terrified. I you know, for like a couple, I went shopping, dude. I got like 2 months worth of stuff. I didn't get the toilet paper, so don't blame me, you know, but like, but all of a sudden, like in the crazy, because of the discipline of meditation, it said to me, discontinue thought, focus on breath. And I sat down and I started to focus on breath, right? And I started to see all these opportunities be a service, right? To get the Zooms together, to get the old timers on there, blah, blah, blah. And next thing I got in service and I was in the game. But then like a little bit later, I got afraid again, right? And my mind was going, and the meditative, the intuitive self said, discontinue thought, focus on breath. And I sat down in meditation and I was scared. And in meditation, what I saw was my whole life flash. I came off of Skid Row. In 5 years, I was making a 6-figure income. I was fired from that job and I didn't know how I was going to pay the rent. I saw in meditation how God showed up. I started a company. I was pushed out of that thing. I was afraid. God showed up. Right. I got an attorney. Attorney settled the case. The day my mom died, the attorney ripped me off for the money. And I got to see how all of that stuff that God always provided and how God was building me for that moment, the hardest time in my life, everyone here's life, the society's life, right? That I was brought to that point that God was love within and that it was my responsibility to go out in the world and put a smile on people's faces, right? Through meditation, right? The messages that come, but it's discipline, right? When my mom died, like I feel more close to my mom today than I have in my entire life when she was physically here through the power of meditation, right? Because I can tap right into that spiritual world. So, I mean, that's going really, really off to a different, but it's about discipline, right? It's about discipline every day, 5 minutes, 5 minutes every day, easy. I give you permission to be late to anything for 5 minutes. Right. And my life changed. That simple direction, my life changed.
Thank you so much. Everybody's going to get the opportunity to thank Pat again after we close the meeting with a prayer. I don't know about you, Pat, but that was a quick hour and a half for me. I hope you had a good time. Just beautiful. Wonderful. I'd like to thank everybody who participated, showed up, took time out tonight to be here. And Larry for wrangling the questions as always. What an amazing little thing we've got going here in AA. If you're new and you're still on board, we'll be here after we close the meeting. We'd love to meet you, talk to you, trade numbers, etc. Q, I haven't met you yet, but I'm grateful you're here. I loved your dad. So I'm going to ask Morgan if he would read the last three paragraphs on 164, please. I probably ought to give you some permissions, bro. Oh, yeah. There we go.
All right. I'm allowed now. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I'm going to get this thing down. Give me another year in lockdown.
Please don't.
Please don't.
Not another year. All right. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. This is a vision for you from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, sir. All right, I'm going to invite everybody to virtually circle up, virtually hold hands, and feel free to unmute, and we can have a raucous, static-filled, confusing version of the Lord's Prayer.
Yes.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation,
but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom,
power and
glory,
forever and ever.
Amen.
Woohoo! Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Pat, that was awesome. Yeah. Thank you, brother. I love you, man.
Thank you, Pat.
Love you, too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Powerful message.
Yes. Thanks. That's thank you.
Incredible.
Yes.
Thank you for the meeting.
That was awesome.
Thank you so much.
You guys did a good job today. Fun group. I appreciate being here.
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
I'm so glad it worked out.